Welcome to Crossroads, a podcast that explores the intersection of faith and Christian living. Crossroads is part of the media ministry at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. Get to know us by visiting us online at fapc.org.
Hi, I'm Jamie Staley, Director of Christian Education at Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church. Welcome to Crossroads Podcast. This fall, we are talking with several folks about what it means to find wonder and awe and renewal in God to go along with our sermon series, Detectives of Divinity. And one of the most common places that I have heard folks talk about where they find wonder and awe in their faith is through music. And so today I am sitting down with Dr. Ryan Jackson, who is our director of music here at Fifth Avenue, to talk about the music here at Fifth Avenue, as well as something new and exciting that is coming up with our chapel. So Ryan, welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thanks so much for having me again.
Yes, we met last spring. Yep. And talked about music.
Yep.
And the awesome concert that you all had last spring.
So, oh, thanks. Yeah, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Good. I know I've heard from several people, our virtual folks who are some of our podcast listeners, about how much it has meant to them to be able to hear it as well, which is really awesome.
I'm really glad to hear that. Yeah, that's been a major expansion for us, and it's really nice to hear from people that we're able to reach that otherwise wouldn't be able to enjoy what we're doing. So yeah, that's really, really neat.
Absolutely. So some of you at home know that our chapel will be renovated in this next upcoming year, and our Kirkland Chapel is a Gothic chapel. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, I hope I've got
yeah,
that information
it's a Gothic
correct.
Style. Yeah. It was built in the 20s, but in the Gothic style.
Yes, yeah. Gothic style chapel, and it has an organ, mm-hmm, like most chapels do. And so part of the renovation for our chapel is going to be putting in a new organ. Mm-hmm. And I did not know what type of research and extensive knowledge that would take. But Ryan, I know that you and Patrick, our organist, mm-hmm, went on some field trips this past spring. Can you tell us just a little bit about what did you do and how did you come to the new decision on what this is going to look like?
Yeah, well, I think one of the most interesting things about being an organist, or, you know, the organ as an instrument in general, is that they're so heavily influenced by the room into which they're going to be installed. Mm. Each one is a custom-made instrument for the room that it's going to be put into. And so there are no two organs in the world that are the same. Mm. You know, every single pipe organ has its own sound, its own character, its own strengths and weaknesses and whatever. And a lot of that comes down to the kind of room that it's been put into and where in the room it's been put into. Mm. And so really the only way to think about what builder we might want to commission to build this instrument is to go and see examples of their work in real life. There's no other way to experience, you know, the pipe organ other than to hear it in real life. You can listen to recordings, but it really doesn't give you a sense of how it works in the space itself. So Patrick and I went traveling around the countryside, taking in several examples of several builders' most recent work. Mm. And we can learn a lot about, you know, the style of organ building that that company is currently engaged in. So I'm going to go back in history just a little bit to give you a little bit of background about why this is kind of a bit complex. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, the organ is a very, very old instrument. It's been around for forever, like in the first few centuries, BC, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, there were organs in like Olympic stadiums and things, and they were
really
very primitive, but they were basically these things called the hydraulis.
Okay.
And it was this big box, basically, with a bunch of pipes stuck in the top of it.
Okay.
And then they would pressurize the air with a lot of water, basically. And then they would just like pull the ripcord and the air would rush through this pipe. And it basically probably sounded something like a train whistle or something now, but it was this instrument. And then eventually people are like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And, you know, in the cathedrals in Europe were these huge spaces where they wanted to try and fill it with like awesome musical sounds. Mm-hmm. And so very gradually over time, they developed ways of controlling these pipes. So rather than them all like exploding in sound at once, you just like pull the thing. They developed ways to stop off certain pipes so that you could control which pipes were playing. And actually the very first organs were so heavy, you played them with your fists. And so you can imagine it would be very like process to sort of play music one note at a time with your fists.
Yeah.
But then eventually over time, those keys for fists became keys for fingers, and they developed keyboards, you know, and that was to control pipe organs. Mm. And then eventually they also developed what we call stops so that they could turn on and off various groups of sounds. So say you wanted just the oboe sound to play, you could turn that on and off, or you wanted just the flute sound to play, you can turn that on and off.
Yeah.
And so this all happened over the course of, you know, over 1,000 years. So by the time, you know, we're in the 1500s, basically each country in Europe had developed their own sort of style of organ building. So we have like French organs, English organs, Dutch organs, Italian organs, Spanish organs, and they all had very distinctive characteristics. And really interestingly, some, you know, musicologists and linguists have noted similarities between the language of the region where the organ's been built and the sound of the instrument, like much. Yeah. So like German organs will have a lot of articulation, you know, just like the language, you know?
Yes.
And so, and then the Italian organs are these very gentle, smooth organs with very little articulation. And it was so interesting. Other people have been a little bit more adventurous too and compared organs of various regions to the wines of the regions. And so that's maybe a bit more of a stretch. Some people really claim it's true, but certainly language in the region influenced the design and the sound of the organs. So the reason I'm saying all this is that there's a lot of history in various regions, and we now will refer to certain colors in organ building by the region that is sort of characterized by those sounds. So we'll be like, oh, you know, like that's a lovely English romantic fundamental or foundation stop, you know, which we would call a diapason, or ooh, that's a lovely French trumpet, or that's a lovely Italian flute, you know. And so we sort of in America have created this amazing modern instrument that draws on all these influences from the past and tries to sort of unite the best elements of all these instruments.
Sounds very American of us.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so even our instruments today reflect that, you know, the diversity of the country. And so our pipe organs also do that and can play anything. And so anyway, as we're going around the country listening to modern builders, it's interesting to take into account like the different kinds of influences that we're hearing in each of their, you know, their latest projects. And over time, too, a lot of these organ builders are around for, you know, for a couple generations at least or something, some of them longer than that. And so they, of course, also go through phases throughout all that time. They don't continue to make the same organ. So there are companies where you can go listen to their instruments from like the 1920s and 30s, and you're like, wow, that was a golden period. And then they go through more experimental things in the middle of the century, and then they come back to more like romantic things now, for example. So there's lots of different things that we need to listen for in real life to see what builders are currently doing. Mm. And we sort of have a sense in our minds of what we need the new organ in Kirkland Chapel to do, which is largely, its main function will be to accompany singing, you know, in the church, whether it's the choir in concert or in worship, or whether it's the hymns, you know, that's the main job of this new organ. And so we know, the tradition that is largely associated with accompanying singing with organs is the English tradition. And so we know that this organ needs to include a lot of English organ building elements in it. And so that was sort of one of the colors that we were interested in hearing that people are doing right now. So anyway, we traveled all over the place. We heard organs in Louisiana and in Kentucky, Tennessee, and in upstate New York. And it was really fun. And it's really amazing to see how wonderful, you know, the modern organ scene is and how active it is. You know, I think a lot of people sort of think because the organ has such a long history that it's an old instrument that is sort of obsolete and not made anymore. But actually, organ builders are busier than ever and are having a hard time keeping up with the demand for new instruments. Mm. They're going into all the new concert halls. A lot of new churches are still putting them in. And, you know, I think there's nothing better for accompanying large groups of people singing together. Like, it's just so good at that. And I think that's one of the main reasons it stood the test of time. It's just really the best at doing that. And so, yeah, so it was really fun going on that trip and sort of seeing what's going on in the country. And it's really exciting.
Can you tell us a little bit about the one that you landed with?
Yeah. We ended up going with this amazing German organ builder called the Glattergutz organ builders. And they're based in the southern part of Germany. And just an absolutely amazing, amazing company. They probably their most famous installation in the United States is the huge concert organ at the Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And if you look that up online, you'll see that organ looks extremely non-traditional. What was his name? The architect for that project. It's very famous. It's not going to come to me right now, but anyway, he collaborated really closely with them, and he wanted something that he said specifically, I do not want this to look like a traditional organ, because I don't know if you've ever been in the Disney Concert Hall, but no. It's very, very modern, beautiful wood everywhere, very colorful seats, and he wanted the organ to look like basically an explosion of sound. And so they have pipes like in every direction, and they brought all the wood ones out front, because often, you know, if you look at a pipe organ, you see mostly metal pipes in the facade. Well, he wanted to actually highlight the wooden pipes of the organ. So they reversed what normally happens and brought a lot of the wooden pipes out of the organ to be on display in the facade. And so if you look up the Glattergutz organ in the Walt Disney Concert Hall, you'll see a really amazing example of modern organ building and you'll see like that is a very modern looking instrument. So they're this wonderful company. They really understand the history of the organ and how to use all the best elements throughout history to create a wonderful modern instrument that can do everything we need it to do in, you know, 21st century New York City. It has to be a really versatile instrument that can do anything. And and it's also got to be extremely sensitively voiced, because the chapel is actually quite an intimate space. You know, Kirkland Chapel is just this lovely, lovely space, but it's very intimate feeling in terms of the way music sounds in there. And so it's very easy for an organ to overpower the room or be too bright and all that. So, you know, we just spent this past week with our acoustician, Dana Kierkegaard, who's a really well-known and well-respected acoustician in the field, in classical music specifically. Absolutely amazing person. And we spent this week doing very extensive acoustical studies in the chapel to understand how the room works. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we're talking about putting a new organ in that space, we're talking about having to figure out how to place over 3,000 pipes.
Wow.
You know, and each one of those has a slightly different character or sometimes extremely different characters. And so we need to understand, like, if we put these pipes in certain places in the side balcony, which is the organ's going to go back in the same place as the current one, but it'll look different. We need to understand exactly how those pipes are going to cause the room to reverberate. You know, and so we were absolutely amazed. We had this cherry picker lift set up, and we did all these crazy experiments with singers and instrumentalists, and we were sending them up on this lift to experiment with heights.
Oh, wow.
You know, so we'd send a soprano and a cellist up to the very top of the roof and hear, what does it sound like hearing a cellist and a soprano make music at that level? And then very gradually experiment with different placements of them in that, you know, in the height of the balcony. And it was just so amazing to hear how different the sound became, even with just moving them, you know, 6 inches or a foot.
Wow.
It would be like the cello would sound really strangled up close to the roof. But then we found this really beautiful sweet spot, you know, about, I'd say, maybe 2/3 of the way up from the gallery, right between the gallery rail and the ceiling, where all of a sudden, like, the cello could play like piano as quiet as possible, and the whole room just sort of rang with the sound of the cello, and it was so effortless, and it was just so beautiful.
Wow.
And then, you know, we'd move them another few feet down, and all of a sudden it became strident, and you could hear it echoing and bouncing off the wall in a weird way that was unpleasant. And so through all this experimentation, we were able to figure out the precise height that the new chests need to be at the organ, so that we get the most ideal sound coming out of the instrument And so it'll be very pleasing to listen to, never overwhelming, but also, you know, capable of that grand roar that, you know, is so characteristic of the pipe organ.
Yeah.
Oh. So it's been a really amazing experience. Honestly, it's this past week, we've had very long hours. We spent, you know, about a couple of days, we've spent almost 18 hours here, you know, just experiencing the space. And it's just amazing how building an organ really calls on the best of so many artisans, you know, because we've got, of course, the obvious things like the musical instrument, you have the organ builder building the pipes and everything. Yeah. But we also have, you know, an architect artist who will design the facade, the way the organ looks. And then we're going to have a bunch of woodworkers who are going to do the beautiful carving of the case. So, you know, and then there may be guilders, like if we ended up having, you know, if we want the pipes to be golden or silver or whatever, like there'll be people who do all that. And then there's just, it brings, I just think it's such a neat process, and it's one of the few things left, I think. Well, that's not fair. There's a lot of things sort of, yeah, a lot of big things call on lots of people to do, you know, really precise and wonderful things. But I think making an organ is just such a beautiful, creative process that bring a lot of really interesting people together, you know, from lots of different backgrounds, because you need engineers to figure out what kind of steel support structure we need so that, you know, the organ doesn't bring the balcony down, or, you know, or, you know, and then the building architect who's going to work with the architect of the organ company to make sure that the case design works well with the appearance in the chapel, and all these really interesting collaborations. And so it's been such a gift for me so far to be working on this project. And I'm just, I'm so excited about it and so enthusiastic about it. And I could talk about this all day. So
I'm so glad. We'll have to do a follow-up once it gets a little closer, right? Well, I think one of the questions that we've heard is, you know, our chapel has an organ. What is it about, you know, why isn't that one, why aren't we keeping that one? Yeah. What is it, why do we need a new one?
So that's a really good question. So earlier I was saying that, you know, organs are designed very specifically with the room in mind that they're going to be installed into. It's really crucial because the size of the room and the acoustic of the room and all of that affects what we call scaling, which is like the actual width of the pipes, and also wind pressures, like how much wind you need to power the pipes, and all that changes based on the acoustics of the room. Well, in the 60s and the 70s, there was that was another golden period in organ building in terms of demand.
Interesting.
People would argue whether it was a golden period in terms of sound. And one of the reasons for that is because they were making organs so quickly and sort of formulaically that a lot of sort of organs got put into spaces and weren't appropriately voiced and are not pleasant to listen to. And I think this is where some people have unpleasant experiences with organs that haven't been built and installed properly, because they're not beautiful to listen to. They're actually overwhelming and they can be piercing and just loud. And I think that's why a lot of people have this like misperception that the organ is just loud. You know, it's not. It's capable of every dynamic level, really. It can be barely audible all the way up to like, you know, the loudest instrument there is. So, but you want that to be a full sound, not shrill, right? So the Austin organ that we have now in the chapel was one of these sort of prefabricated instruments that you could order in various sizes. And there's very little work done to customize it for the space it was installed into, but they're very, very economical. So my guess is that the church was looking for a quick solution. It's like, we need a new organ in the chapel and we need it quickly and we don't want to spend that much on it right now, so let's just order this. And they basically went to, you know, the Austin catalog and ordered a small organ, and Austin, you know, could produce that very quickly, probably within a couple months or something, for the new chapel. They just basically would give Austin the dimensions of the space the organ would be installed into, and then Austin would have those pipes ready to go, basically send them out with a few builders. The builders would install them into the space, and then maybe a voicer would come and do some like very basic adjustments, just so it's not too unpleasant to listen to. But then you end up with this instrument that's just sort of very nondescript and is not appropriate to the room. You know, and that organ has a lot of significant limitations. You know, for someone who doesn't know too much about organs, you'd sort of hear it and be like, yeah, that sounds like a pipe organ. But you'd also notice like, oh, that like the high notes are quite shrill. There's not enough bass There's very limited colors. It can make like three different sounds, and so it's not a great musical instrument. It's a sort of utilitarian. It's something we can use, you know, to make a wedding or a funeral happen or a service. We can get through it, or a concert, but it's not a beautiful instrument to listen to. It just is there. And so what we're proposing now is something completely different. We're talking about like listening to Kirkland Chapel and trying to understand what kind of organ it wants. I know that sounds like very like, you know, woo or whatever, but it's, you know, this whole past week has been about trying to understand what kind of organ that chapel wants to be built into it that will work best in that space. And so, like I say, this new instrument will be able to do the softest whisper imaginable, where you're going to have to be completely silent in the room to listen and hear this beautiful ethereal sounds, all the way up to that beautiful, rich roar that we love, you know, at the end of a very exciting hymn or something, when the organ really lets loose and it's not loud and piercing, but it's full and rich and thrilling, you know. And so that's what we're designing, and that's what we're going to make sure we get to put into Kirkland Chapel.
Very cool. So before, and I missed how many pipes you said this new organ is going to have.
The new organ will probably have in the vicinity of 3,000 pipes or so.
And what does our current organ have there?
Oh, I actually have no idea, but it's a fraction of that size. I'd be surprised if there may not even be 1,000 pipes in the current organ.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's really important to understand too that more pipes doesn't mean louder. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're after, like by multiplying the number of pipes in there. It's you need more pipes to have a greater variety of choices in sound. Mm. And so this organ will be capable of many different kinds of quieter sounds, you know. So there'll be a clarinet on it. Our current organ doesn't have a clarinet. There'll be an oboe. Our current organ doesn't have an oboe. Many different flute sounds, many different string sounds. And so the organ will be capable of many different colors, and that's why it needs more pipes. In comparison, for example, our sanctuary organ in the Big Austin in the sanctuary is about 8,000 pipes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that gives you a sense of scale, right? Yeah. Our current chapel organ is about 1,000, say. Our current sanctuary organ is about 8,000. The new organ will be about 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're getting there.
Yeah.
We're getting there.
That should be enough. I think that'll be enough.
Yeah. I mean, it is a smaller space. Yeah, exactly. But, you know. So clearly you love the organ. I mean, just hearing you talk about this new organ and the possibilities, what drew you to the organ in the first place?
So I grew up in Canada, as probably many of you know, and I grew up in this little town called Bracebridge, and it's about 150 miles north of Toronto. And I grew up attending the local United Church. And so in Canada, we have the United Church of Canada, which was an amalgamation of the Methodists and about 85% of the Presbyterian Church in Canada in the 20s. They merged and created the United Church of Canada. So very similar in tradition to Fifth Avenue. I feel right at home here in terms of theology and, you know, the worship service and everything. Very similar.
The music.
Yeah, the music. Yeah. And so, you know, I was very, my grandfather was especially involved in the church, and we grew up going there all the time. And I can remember from the very earliest age being very curious about the pipe organ. Hmm. I loved all music, you know, in general, from the time I was old enough to walk, I'd go, you know, running. If someone had a musical instrument in their house, I'd go running right for it, or a stereo system, anything that made music. I was really always obsessed with it. But growing up in this church, I thought the pipe organ was really neat, and especially the bass. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I was obsessed with the fact that it, like when you played the low notes, the room would rumble a little bit. And I thought that was just so amazing. And talk about awe-inspiring. Yeah. You know, I think I'm glad we're having this conversation in and around this sermon series about awe and wonder, because to me, there's no more awesome or, you know, wonder-inspiring instrument than the pipe organ. It's just so amazing, you know, the instrument. So I think I felt that from a very early age. And so as soon as I was sort of old enough, my mom got me involved in the junior choir there, and I started taking piano lessons and sort of worked my way up that way. And then when I was about 16 or 17 years old, the music director at the church that I was very close with actually signed me up to play in an organ master class at this thing called the Summer Institute of Church Music. And I was away on a band trip in England when she did this. So I got back, and she's like, oh, by the way, you know, in like 6 weeks, you're going to play in this master class at this thing called the Summer Institute of Church Music. And I was like, but I don't play the organ. She's like, well, you've got 6 weeks to figure it out, you know? I basically taught myself to play one piece on the organ. And you know, the music director, her name was Linda. She's amazing. She listened to me a few times, gave me some pointers, and was like, yeah, this is gonna be great. So we went to this thing, and I was by far the youngest person there, by far, because I was like 16, and you know, like probably the next youngest person was 43 or something. You know, it was like big age difference. And so a few of the other people played first for this woman, and then my turn came around, and I was just shaking like a leaf. I was so scared, and I climbed. This organ was down. The console was down in a pit, so I climbed down into the pit under the organ bench, and I sort of like fumbled around and made my way through this piece as best as I could. And then I was just so excited when it was over, and she walked over to me and she looks down very closely at my feet, and she's like, are you playing in your sock feet? And I was like, yeah, why? And she said, well, if you're going to be doing this seriously, you need to get yourself a pair of organ shoes. And that was the first thing she said to me. And I had no idea that there even was such a thing. So anyway, I played some more for her, and she was giving me directions about like how to change my articulations and change the combinations of stops that I was using, things like that. And toward the end of our time, she said, you know, you adjust really quickly, and your organ teacher must love working with you. And I said, actually, I've never had an organ lesson in my life. And she was like, what? She's like, stay after class. I need to talk to you. We have to move on right now, but I want to talk to you. So then after class, I went and talked to her, and she said, you know, you're really talented. You should seriously think about playing the organ. It's your instrument. She's like, you're really good at it. And she said she was actually the music director at Metropolitan United Church in Toronto, which was like, you know, in a two and a half hour drive from where I was, you know, living still with my parents. And so I was like, So she said, if you know, you should be taking lessons, and I'd be very happy to teach you. And so I ran all the way back to the dorms where we were staying, and I called my parents and was like, oh my God, like the best organist in Canada just like told me I'm talented and I should be taking organ lessons. Can I take lessons? And without like missing a beat, my mom was just like, absolutely, we'll figure it out. She's like, you'd go tell her that you'd be interested. And so she played a concert that night as part of the program. And afterwards I went up to her and I said, yeah, I would love to do it. And so the really exciting thing for me at that point was not only working with her, which was incredible, but at the church where she worked, Metropolitan, has the largest pipe organ in Canada. And it's actually a little bit bigger than the Austin here in the sanctuary. But for me, this was a really big deal because the organ at my home church was similar to the Austin we currently have in the chapel, tiny. And so to go from that to like this huge organ with 8,000 pipes was just like mind blowing.
Wow.
Yeah. And so for the last 2 years of high school, I drove myself down to Toronto from my hometown every weekend for lessons with her. And that's how I got into playing the organ. And then one thing led to another, and I ended up doing all three of my degrees in organ performance. And, you know, my studies led me down here to the United States, and first to Yale in Connecticut. And then I ended up here at Juilliard here in New York City to do my doctorate. And then that's when I applied for this job when it came up, and that's how we got here.
That's so awesome. I'm excited. Well, that's one of the things I like about this podcast. I get to hear stories of like your childhood. That's so fun. I had no idea that was how that all started.
Yeah, that's where it all began. So I'm so grateful to all those, you know, people early in my life that encouraged me and you know, understood. I don't know, you know, like how do you encourage a kid to take up playing the pipe organ? You know, it's so funny, but they somehow did. And I'm so grateful for that. And so,
That is awesome. Oh, so here at the church, you know, we have the organ, I'm going to say every Sunday. Yeah. Is there any Sunday where we don't have the organ?
Not really, no. Basically, okay. It's every Sunday, yeah.
So how do you find that the organ enhances worship? Like what does it do that another instrument doesn't do?
So I think, you know, something is similar along the same lines as what we were talking about a little earlier when I said I really think that for accompanying large crowds of people singing, there's not really anything that does it quite as well as an organ. And why that is, I think, is because the instrument is acoustic. So it's actually resonating the air that we're breathing and being in and making noise in ourselves. You know, it's using the same air. It's breathing the same way we are. And there's a big difference, and this is, it's partially like, of course, what are the words I'm looking for? Objective or yeah, there are objective ways of quantifying this, but there it's also what's the opposite of subjective? Yes.
Words are hard.
My words are leaving me. there are objective ways of sort of measuring the difference in the way that an acoustic instrument resonates in the way we hear it versus digital instruments or electronic instruments. And there's something like in all these blind tests, researchers have found that people given the choice always find acoustic instruments more pleasant to listen to than digital or electric instruments. And so there's like a subconscious reaction to acoustic instruments. And all instruments have their place and all instruments are wonderful. But I do think that, the organ is able to create a sense of occasion in a very special way because of the variety of sounds it can make and also its extreme dynamic range that it's able to play so softly all the way up to like the sound of a full symphony orchestra in one under the control of one musician. And I think especially in our modern world, where music is so easily accessible to us, like we can just turn on our phones at any moment and put in some headphones and listen to anything. I think the fact that the organ sort of offers a very different sound world is for me, I find that very special when I come to church, that's sort of, and this is totally a cultural thing, but I come to church and that's sort of the sound I've associated with this space my whole life. Yeah. And I know that's not true for everyone, but for me, I find that really, really powerful that this is like something I don't experience anywhere else. It's special to this experience of coming to church and I hear the organ and it's like, I don't hear that when I go to like a Taylor Swift concert or something. Yeah. And I love lots of different kinds of music, but it's neat to have this one sort of thing that is most closely associated with coming to church. I think that's really cool. And if you think about the history of the organ, like the organ was the first rock concert, right? Like if you think about people in the 1500s, they didn't have anything louder. They'd never heard anything louder than an organ. There's no amplification. There's no electricity. So imagine these like little villagers who are out in the fields all week, then they'd come to their village church, whatever, go in and like they'd start, they'd have someone pumping the bellows by hand and the organist would sit down and imagine hearing like the hymns start playing on full organ.
Yeah.
It would just be the most awe-inspiring thing you've ever heard. And so I think the instrument's ability to sort of be an awe-inspiring presence, I think is what makes it so special.
Absolutely. You mentioned earlier that low rumble, the bass, and sometimes I like then it feels like a feeling, I feel like that is kind of that awe and wonder where it becomes like an actual tangible feeling within you.
Yes, I completely agree with you, and that you've said that really well. That's sort of what I'm trying to say in all of these words. It's like it's this instrument is able to do that in a way that's unlike anything else I've ever experienced. Anyway,
Well, I'm excited we've got a ways to go before we're going to hear a new organ in the chapel. But I do know for the time being, you guys have some concerts coming up. And last year we talked about we spent quite some time talking about what that concert coming up was. And I think there's two things happening coming up, right? There's a concert and then there's an organ recital. Can you just briefly tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah. So we only have a couple concerts left in the chapel in its current state, and so this is exciting. It's our last two, I think. So our first one will come up on October 20th, and that'll be our first concert of the season, October 20th at 7, and we'll be performing obviously live in the chapel for anyone who's in the New York area.
Awesome.
But if you're not, you can tune in. We'll be doing the live stream, and all the information is available at fapc.org/tickets. And that first concert is going to be a choir concert with music about music, celebrating music. And so we're doing this amazing Hymn to Saint Cecilia by the British composer Benjamin Britten. We'll also be doing our the new Te Deum that we just premiered this past Sunday by Philip Stopford. That was written for my 10th
anniversary. For your anniversary.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll be giving that a good concert treatment, which I'm really excited about, to sort of dig into that a little bit more and see what else we can find in that piece. Mm. And then a few other new pieces as well. We're doing another new piece by the amazing American composer Jessica French. And she and I went to Yale together, and she's just been having so much wonderful success lately as a composer of choral music. So that's going to be a really exciting concert. The choir is sounding fabulous this year already, even at their very first Sunday. And sometimes it takes us, you know, a little while to like find the group sound, but I'm so pleased with the group this year. So
good.
It's exciting.
Good.
And then, Patrick's going to be playing the first organ recital of the season on Sunday, November 5th.
Okay.
Yeah. In the Sanctuary on the Big Austin. And, that event will only be in person. So if you're in the New York area and want to come check out, Patrick playing some really exciting organ music on November 5th. That will be the thing to do at 1 p.m.
1 p.m. Yeah. All right. Well, awesome. Well, thank you so much again for sitting down with me. I am looking forward to the new organ in the chapel, but also for the concerts that will happen in the meantime. So thank you again.
Thanks for having me, Jamie. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to Crossroads. Our managing editor is Jamie Staley, and our editors are Vashina Brisbane and Emily Dombroff.